Hello, and welcome to the Small Business University audio presentation of the month. This monthly CD web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of teaching small business owners how to run profitable companies. Each month, a different national speaker or business owner shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. The service department should be the most profitable department within the company, but it's usually not. The two overall reasons for poor performance are improperly set hourly rates and poor management. This presentation is going to focus on the management side of the service department. We'll talk about what key performance indicators need to be tracked within the three divisions of the service department: demand service, maintenance, and profit smart activities. If your service department is going to be profitable, specific goals must be set and performance against those goals must be accurately measured. When that happens, profitability will skyrocket. This month's presenter is Tom Grandy, founder of the Small Business University audio series. Tom is the president of Grandy & Associates, based out of Owensboro, Kentucky. His company has been providing business training coast to coast and in Canada for over 25 years. This presentation is a short summary of Tom's full-day seminar workshop entitled Service Managers University. If you are interested in learning how to run a very profitable service department, you'll enjoy this presentation. Now sit back, relax, and prepare to take notes as Tom shares his experience in how to properly manage a service department.
I noticed a strange misconception in our industry. Now, this may not be your particular company, but as an industry, this is kind of what's happening. We kind of assume in our industry, because service, our hourly rate for service is two or three or maybe four times what our installation rate is, we must be making money in service. I mean, at those rates, we got to be. Well, the irony is, we're usually not. Okay? There's two specific reasons in our industry why we don't make money in our service department. Number one, it's improperly priced, and number two, it's improperly managed. We're going to touch on pricing a little bit today, but primarily we're going to look at the management of the service department. Today's presentation is actually kind of a mini session on a full-day seminar we have called Service Manager University. We're going to cover a lot of key points today, but it's designed as a full-day session. So if you've got a distributor or somebody who might want to put one of those on, we're available to do it. But I think you'll pick up a lot of good, useful information today. Now, the first question is, why is service underpriced, at least as an industry, maybe not you? Well, it's pretty obvious when you start to think about it. It costs a lot to run your service department. I mean, generally, your number one cost of doing business in your entire company is your cost of non-billable time. Well, in service, half the time that you pay the tech for, you can't charge the customer. By the time you take shop time in the morning, shop time in the afternoon, travel time between jobs, no-show customers, warranty, company meetings, vacations, holidays, sick, put all that together, about half the time you can actually bill the customer. Well, if I'm paying a guy $18 an hour with taxes he's at 20 and half his time is non-billable, that means just my cost of non-billable time for one tech is $20,000 a year. If I got five techs, that's $100,000 a year. That's just one item in my overhead in my service department. Also, if you have a significant size service department, you got support staff. You have a service manager and or a dispatcher in the middle of that process. That's extra overhead for that department. The replacement of your service tech's vehicles is high. Fuel and maintenance on the service on your vehicles in the service department is high because we put a lot of miles on those. The general overhead in service by itself is high. So with all these additional high costs of doing business, unfortunately, we have a limited number of hours we can actually bill the customer. Bottom line, our rate is generally high. It's the unusual company in this country, in our industry, when you actually run the numbers and see what's going on, can charge less than $100 an hour and still make a profit in service. It can be done in some situations, but generally, when you literally understand what it costs you to run your company, if you can do it for less than $100 an hour in your service department, you're in an unusual situation. Okay. So from a cost standpoint, that's why we're underpriced. Now, when it comes to management, what's the problem there? Well, number one, we have a huge number of variables in our service department, as you all know, because you work in that area. there's never been, at least until now, any real KPIs, key performance indicators, to measure against. Now, there's actually 24 KPIs within your service department we should be measuring against. We're only going to hit about 5 or 6 of them today because of a time situation. But you'll notice on your yellow sheet, if you want a full listing of all 24, free with definitions, just check that off and I'll be glad to send that to you. Okay? So we didn't know what the KPIs were, therefore it's kind of hard to measure against them, and there was never a system available to actually track performance and reward the technician's productivity. So again, the service side from a management standpoint is a difficult bear. Okay? Now in terms of our time this afternoon, we're going to look at 3 areas of service. We're going to look at demand service. And when we look at demand service, we're going to look at the effect of setting very specific goals for our service department. We're going to spend a little time talking about some of the reasons for poor performance within our service department. We're going to talk about just briefly how to properly set your rates, a quick and dirty way of doing it. That's not the way you should, but if you don't have any idea, it'll at least give you a rough idea. We're going to talk briefly about the effect of flat rate pricing in terms of our demand service. We're going to look at 3 very specific key performance indicators that you need to be tracking within your demand service portion of your service department. I'm going to show you briefly a timesheet where you can track all that information. Now, again, we're not going to go through that entire timesheet. We don't have time to do it, but again, that's one of the free things I'll send you if you'd like a copy of that. Okay? So that's what we're going to cover in the area of demand service. When it comes to maintenance, we're going to talk about the value of a maintenance agreement program in general. We're going to talk about the issue of properly pricing maintenance agreements. That's a huge issue in our industry because generally we underprice maintenance, and that's costing us bottom line profitability in our service department many times. We're going to talk about the link between maintenance agreements and flat rate pricing, and there's a very direct link between those two. We're going to talk about the 90 slow days per year that most people in our industry have, and then for how to fill those, again, with maintenance agreements. We're going to talk about what we call the creation of a team between the dispatcher and the technician himself. If they begin to work together in the area of maintenance, I mean, you will literally sell maintenance agreements boom, boom, boom every single day. They work together, and we'll talk about that a little bit. We're going to look at 2 very specific KPIs, again, just for the maintenance portion of your business. Third area is what we call profit smart activities. We're going to talk about the situation where many of us are, where we're stagnant in growth. We just seem to hit this particular level. We've done everything we knew how to do and just can't get over that 800,000 or 1,000,002 or 2,000,000 or whatever happens to be. We just can't seem to get over it. Well, some of the profit smart activities we're going to talk about has the ability to jumpstart you above your current level. We'll talk about those in a bit. We're going to look at the industry's closing rates for different type of sources, leads coming from your service department, advertising leads, etc. We're going to compare those and see what's really going on. We're going to look at the benefits of marketing, not selling, but marketing through your service technician. We're also going to talk about why we don't want our technicians selling replacement equipment. Okay? Now, it's kind of contrary to some of you. I know that. Let me talk about it before you just kind of turn me off in the middle of it. Okay? And we're also going to talk about, and this is one of the most exciting parts, qualified sales leads. We're talking about here is a technician open his eyes, doing some verbal things with a customer. That can literally cause your retrofit sales to skyrocket and get you off that stagnant situation within your company. And then within the Profit Smart activities, there'll be a couple of KPIs specifically for that particular department. Now, let me ask you a question. Who do you think currently is setting the standards in your service department? Who do you think really, really, when it gets right down to it, sets the standards in your service department? Yeah, the guy in the field. Matter of fact, it's not just the guy in the field. It's usually your most senior technician, the ones that get paid the most. Why? Even if you got a service manager, he's the one that sets the tone. Why? Because he comes in 10 minutes late every morning. Other guys look at him and say, you know what, I can come in 10 minutes late. He does. He's been here forever. His truck's always messy, but the boss never says anything, so I guess it's okay if I do that. And gee, he stops at McDonald's, gets coffee or breakfast every day. If he does, I guess I can. Okay. When you get right down to it, without specific key performance indicators and measuring their profitability against that, the person who's really running the service department is your most senior technician. Happens every time. Okay? By the way, when you start tracking some of that information, we have a program called Profit Max that'll do that. Almost without exception, what we find out is the most senior tech, the one that's been there the longest, is the least productive. And the one who's been there the shortest period of time that you're getting ready to actually fire, when you start looking at the numbers, he's the most productive guy you got. So it's important to separate personalities and look at actual KPIs and measure them against that within your company. Now, an amazing thing happens when you begin to set specific goals in your company. Setting specific goals. Number one, everybody on the team now has something to work towards. That's interesting all by itself. A goal provides a benchmark to measure your progress against. This is what we're shooting for. Where are we? How are we doing? Are we increasing? And best of all, once given a specific goal, and this is amazing to me, but I've seen it happen over and over again, once you give them a specific goal, individuals tend to meet or exceed that goal. We have a lady in our company. Her name is Linda Haddix. She has done marketing for us for our three-day basic business boot camp for years. After she'd been here about 2.5 years, we ran some numbers and we found out, you know, the number of people we're getting in a boot camp isn't enough to be profitable. Instead of having this many people, we need this many. I went back to Linda, and she never had a goal before. She never had a bonus system. I went back and said, hey, Linda, in order to hit the profit margins that we need in our company, we need this many people in a boot camp on a regular basis. She looked at me and said, we've never had that many in there. I've been here 2.5 years. We've never done that. And I said, well, that's how many we need. Now, I want you to shoot for this goal right here. If you hit it, you get this kind of bonus. For each additional one over that, you get this many bonuses, dollars. You know what? She never had a goal before. We set it in the next 3 months in a row. She didn't just meet it, she exceeded it. But she never had a goal to work towards before. It's absolutely amazing to me when you set a specific goal, how many of your employees will literally not only meet that goal, but they exceed that goal. And like my partner says, you'll never hit a goal you never set. Guess what? Now, once specific goals are set, what's going to be the reaction of your technicians? You're going to get two very specific reactions from the techs who are doing a poor job and don't want to be measured, don't want you to know they're doing a bad job. Guess what? They're going to get really, really defensive. I'm not going to that system. You're not going to measure me on that. Why? That's a big red flag as an owner or service manager. Hey, that guy's not as productive as you might think he is in the middle of the process. Because what you find out is those techs who are doing an outstanding job will welcome any system of measurement with an open arms. Good techs want to be measured. They want you to know they're doing a good job, and they want to be rewarded for doing a good job. Again, set the goal, measure their productivity, and reward them for it. Okay? Now, I want to go through just quickly, because we don't have a whole lot of time, but I want to go through several different reasons for poor performance. As I read through each one of these, think through them yourself and ask yourself this question. Is this particular problem a management problem, M? Or is it caused by the technician? Or is it a combination of management and the technician? Okay? These are several reasons for poor performance. The point is, who's to blame for it? Not that we're trying to blame somebody, but I have a point in this whole thing. Now, when the hourly rate is set incorrectly, is that a technician or a management problem? Management, obviously, okay? Tech doesn't set your rates. Fear of charging what you need to charge because somebody else will underprice you. By the way, don't worry about it. Somebody will underprice you. That's the nature of the industry. If you focus on that, forget it. You're going to go out of business. But is that a tech problem or a management problem? It's management again, okay? Technician underbilling. Whose fault is that? Probably both. If he's not productive, he's causing the underbilling. But as a manager, if I'm not measuring his productivity and helping him get better at what he's doing, it's my fault too. Okay? Number four, inefficiency causing the need for too many service techs for the amount of work that we've got. Is that a tech problem? No, it's management. Okay. Too many trips to the distributor or shop for parts. Is that tech or management? Both, okay? Could be we're not stocking his truck properly. Could be it's his responsibility and he's not stocking it properly. But again, overall management. Poor first-time completion percentage. Who is that? Tech or manager? Yeah, it's primarily the tech, but it can be the manager as well. Because if he's not finishing it, and we'll see that KPI later, 95 times out of 100, he should finish it the first time he's out there. If he's not hitting that, it becomes a management problem. You know, what's causing that and what can I do about it in terms of helping him increase his percentages on that? Again, 95% of the time they should complete it the first time. Number seven, poor travel efficiency. Is that the tech's problem? No, probably the dispatcher if you get right down to it. Okay. Unnecessary callbacks? Yeah, tech a little bit, some management. Too many callbacks, same thing. Okay. Unclear performance expectations, again, that's a very much a management problem. Unapplied time, time not charged to the job properly, okay, or not charged to the job at all. Again, that's a management situation. Too much manager applied time. When we call manager applied time, that's time that we gave the permission to the technician to do something other than service or maintenance in the field. It's okay if you go to this meeting or go over here or do this or work in the shop. Poor dispatching. Again, that's a dispatching problem, not the technician. And the last two, keeping underperforming technicians with poor attitudes. Okay, whose problem is that? Yeah. How many of us have been in a situation where we've got a tech who's been an irritation for us from 6 months to 3 years? And he happens to be my highest paid tech. He's been with me the longest. I really don't want to get rid of him, but man, he's a pain. Okay? And finally, you've had it up to here and you fire him. And you know what happens within 12 hours? Every single technician comes to me and says, why didn't you get rid of him 6 months ago? I mean, he's got a terrible attitude. He's been doing this with a customer. He's been, oh, really? You know, and that's a management problem. That's not a tech problem. And number three, last one, 18, wages for technicians outpacing the street rate. Again, that's not a technician problem. That's a management problem. So the point of this whole exercise is pretty straightforward. And you've already figured it out. The reasons for poor performance in the service department primarily is a management problem. It's not a technician problem. We tend to blame our techs for poor performance, but the bottom line is we as the managers are the ones who are really responsible for that whole process. Okay. Now, price for profit. If your labor rate for service is not properly set from a cash flow perspective, then you will never be profitable. Okay? Never be profitable. Now, when you're setting your hourly rates, we're just going to set on rates for just a minute or two here. Make sure you set them from a cash flow perspective versus accounting. Okay. How many times have you been to your accountant and you sat down with him at the end of the year and said, congratulations, you had a wonderful year. You made X numbers of thousands of dollars of which you'll pay taxes on. And you look in your checkbook and you say, where is it? Huh? See, there's significant differences in cash flow and accounting. Accounting tends to work with paper dollars where cash flow deals with the real dollars that flow in and the real dollars that flow out. Okay? The two biggest differences in cash flow and accounting are these right here. Equipment replacement cost versus depreciation. Okay. Depreciation deals with what I paid for something 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and I can write off a percentage of that every year according to Uncle Sam. Okay. But when we talk about equipment replacement cost, we're talking about how much it's going to cost me in the future and build that into today's pricing. Okay. That's significantly higher than depreciation. And the other really big difference between cash flow and accounting is this one right here, and that's how loan payments are handled. If you got a $500 loan payment, $100 of its interest and $400 of its principal, who knows what shows up in your accounting income statement? Anybody know? Yeah, just the interest, absolutely, that $100. But I wrote a check for $500. Where's the other $400? Well, it went off to Never Never Land. Yeah, it's in your assets and your liabilities, but it's not in your P&L statement, and that's what you pay taxes on. Okay? Now, that can be significant. That's why when you sit down with an accountant sometimes and he said you made money and you don't have any left, if you got a lot of loan payments, that can be a big piece of the puzzle. So when you're setting your hourly rates, they need to be set based on cash flow dollars, not accounting dollars. And keep in mind the two most expensive costs of doing business in your service department, and these are often overlooked when it comes to pricing. Your number one cost of doing business in your service department is your cost of non-billable time. And we briefly touched on that a moment ago. Again, if a guy's making $18 an hour with taxes, he's at 20. Half his time he can't bill out. That's $20,000 worth of overhead cost of non-billable time in your service department. Three techs, that's $60,000. Okay? Mounts up quick. Single highest cost of doing business. And the second highest one is equipment replacement cost. Any trade out there, that's usually your second highest cost. Both of those are more than marketing, more than rent, more than utilities, more than any other cost of doing business in your service department. Okay? So when you're setting your rates, keep these things in mind. It should be from a cash flow perspective, and make sure you include those costs of doing business we just talked about. Okay? Now, as a general rule of thumb, and this is just a real quick way to set your pricing, and I don't recommend this, but if you have no idea and you don't have our software, you haven't been through a program, and you need to find out roughly what you need to charge, this is kind of a quick rule of thumb. To be profitable in service, your total cost of labor, that is your direct labor cost itself, dollars per hour, plus direct overhead for that, which would be matching taxes, 401k plan, uniforms, any overhead that goes directly to that technician, okay, personally. Cost of labor and his direct overhead costs cannot exceed 25% of your gross income. In other words, if I had $10,000 worth of income this month, my total cost for direct labor and overhead can't exceed $2,500. Okay? So, for example, let's say my labor this month, labor and overhead came in at $8,235. That's my gross income. That's what it cost me. I'm sorry. Cost of labor and direct overhead for that labor. My service income for the month was $35,000. Do the division. That means my rate is 23.3%. That's pretty good. Okay. Now, be careful when it goes over 25, because it doesn't seem very big when you go to 26 or 27 or 28. But if you do the math, you know what you find out? For every 1% above 25, it's costing you 2% net profit on the bottom line. So that's a big number you need to be watching. Now, this is a brief, quick way, a very rough way to calculate your hourly rate. Take that loaded rate per hour for the tech, again, his hourly rate and all the direct overhead with it, divided by 75%, that's taking out vacations, holidays, and sick days, and that brings you back to 34.44. Okay? Then take this and divide it by 75 gets me to my 34.44. And then my production rate, again, we said cannot exceed 25%. So you divide that by 0.25, that means in my example here, I'm paying him $25 an hour with overhead. I need to be charging the customer $137.76. Okay? Now, by the way, I'll say this again later on. This year, for whatever reason, they didn't print manuals out for you. But if you sign up on that yellow sheet and put send me PowerPoint, I'll be glad to email it to you. As a matter of fact, maybe make it even simpler for you. If you got a calling card with you, and you want all the free stuff on there, just give me one of your cards and write free on there somewhere, and I'll send you a copy of the PowerPoint and the other free things. If you want to buy something, then use a yellow sheet. Okay? But that's a quick and dirty way to figure out what you need to be charging per hour. Okay? Now, there's better ways to do that. We have a labor pricing software that models your company. It's $400. It's actually half price on the yellow sheet right there. And we also have a three-day program called the Basic Business Bootcamp. That will walk you through the process of setting proper hourly rates by department. Now, let's say you've walked through the process from whatever means and you find out, you know, I really need to charge $138 an hour. Now, maybe I'm only at 75 right now, but I need to charge $138 an hour. Okay? How am I going to get that? Well, you're not going to get it on time and material, I promise you. Okay? The only way you're going to get that 138 is to move to flat rate pricing within our industry. Now, I think I know the answer to this already, but how many of you are on flat rate? Okay, we're always preaching to the choir at Comfort Tech. You guys are ahead of the scale. But some of you haven't gone to that yet. Okay? Flat rate pricing is going to become the standard of our industry, just like it has in the automotive industry over the years. Okay? It's going to become the standard of our industry not because it's a great program, although it is. It's going to become the standard of our industry because of this. Number one, our cost of labor, that is to hire and retain employees, is going up every single day. Our cost of benefits for those same employees is increasing every day. Our general cost of doing business is increasing every single day. And depending on where you are geographically in the country, when you're on time and material and your time and material rate exceeds $75 to $100 an hour, it's a tough sell. But if I just calculated I need $138 and I'm on time and material, Ms. Jones, I'm going to work on your furnace. By the way, it's $138 an hour. My husband doesn't make that. You know, I don't think my doctor makes that much money. You're going to charge me $138? Well, that's what it cost us. Forget it. But you've run the numbers and you found out you got to have that. Well, the only way you're going to get it is through flat rate pricing. Okay? Now, I've got a whole presentation on flat rate pricing. We don't have time to go through that. I just want to encourage you, if you're not on flat rate, give it some serious consideration. Go around to the different booths in the show. Talk to the people. I've been doing business training in the trades industry for over 25 years in all the different trades. And I have never once, not once, found a company who made the full transition to flat rate who ever think about going back to it. And the beauty is when things change, you need to raise your rate $12 an hour, reprint the manuals, you're out the door the next day. Okay? Nobody knows the difference from a customer standpoint. Okay? Give it some serious thought. Now let me ask you a simple question or two. What costs have gone up over the last 12 months? Have your wages for your technicians gone up? Anybody? Let me see your hands. Yeah, most everybody in here. How about your workman's comp, vehicle, and health insurance? Did anybody of those go up? They all went up too. What about gasoline and maintenance? We know the answer to that one, don't we? Okay. What about the salaries and benefits you're paying your employees? They've gone up again. Okay. Cell phones, marketing, general expenses. Okay. They've gone up. And manufacturers have raised the prices on parts as well. Okay. In other words, we've had significant increase in terms of our cost of doing business, especially in the service department over the 12 years. Question I want to pose to you, because most of you are on flat rate pricing, is how long has it been since you reprinted your books? You don't have to answer that because I don't want to embarrass anybody in here. But it amazes me as I talk to the different flat rate companies, the trouble they have, I mean, literally forcing a contractor to reprint his books after 2 or 3 or 4 years. I mean, look at what just went up. We just talked about it. All these things went up every year. If that's not included in your rate, you're losing that. Okay? Just think of what's happened to the price of copper over the last couple of years. Okay? So I want to strongly encourage you, when you're on flat rate pricing and or when you go to it, reprint your books a minimum of at least once a year. And I strongly recommend you reprint them twice a year. Okay? Because your cost of doing business is going up on a regular basis. Okay? Now, let's talk about the first KPI. Again, we're talking about the demand service part of your company. Average revenue per billable hour. That's the KPI we're looking for. We'll explain that as we go along. Believe it or not, the average service tech cost your company over $10,000 a year by underbilling for work that was actually performed. Over $10,000 a year for work that was actually performed. Now, I'm not sitting here in front of you saying, hey, John Doe went out to the customer today and intentionally underbilled the customer. That's not happening. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about. But think about it. If you're on time and material, it can happen real easy. He was out there for 2.25 hours. He just wrote down 2 hours. He used 4 parts, but he only wrote down 3 of them. I should have marked him up 80%. He only marked him up 60%. It's real easy to underbill on time and material. Now, unfortunately, our industry thinking is, well, gee, I can take care of that. I'll go to flat rate pricing. The price is right there in the book. I can't possibly underbill the customer. Well, guess what? It's just as big a problem on flat rate as it is on time and material. Different reason, but you underbill just as often. Do you know how many nationwide, how many average tasks are done per service call in our industry? 3.2 per trip. That's the average. Now, how many are physically written down on each call, on the average? 2. That means there's 1.2 tasks. It may not be a big one, okay, but it's still a task that didn't get written down. That just cost me my labor, my material, my overhead, my profit, my sales tax. All that went out the door, okay? Just because it didn't get written down. It's just as big a problem on flat rate as it is on time and materials. We have a program called Profit Max, and when I start measuring people's productivity and looking at their reports, you know what I find out on the average first couple of months? Their average technician underbills somewhere around $10 to $30 an hour on the average, okay? And we never knew it. Now, how do we find out? We calculate what we call the equivalent charge out rate. This is how many dollars should be coming into your company for every physical hour you bill the customer in service. And what you do is you take your current hourly rate if you're on time and material. Fine, use that rate. If you're on flat rate pricing, use the internal rate that you have. The average in our industry for part sales per hour for service is $21 per hour, your cost. The average markup on those parts is 100%, which is another $21. If you have a trip charge, add that in. If you're on flat rate pricing and you have a diagnostic fee, take a third of your diagnostic fee. Why? Because about a third of your time on the job is spent doing the diagnostic survey. Add those together. In my case, that's $133.17 per hour. That's how many dollars I should be bringing in for every hour I physically bill the customer. Okay? And if I charge out half my time or 1,000 hours a year, that means that technician should be grossing at that rate about $133,000 a year. Okay? Now, to find out if that's happening, it's a pretty simple thing to do. All you have to do is take a period of time. You can take a day, a week, a month, a whole year if you want to. If you got the information, and take your total gross sales in your service department for whatever period that is, and divide it by the total number of hours you actually bill the customer. Well, my example, we billed out to a little over $4,100. We had 38 chargeable hours. That means my average was $108.13 an hour. But I was supposed to be at 133 plus. There's a question back here? So if I take what should have been 133, my average is 108 times 1,000 hours, that means that one technician, if he continues the way he is right now, is underbilling our customers, or actually costing our company over $25,000 a year. Okay? We need to know what our charge-out rate is, and we need to measure that. That's our first KPI. Okay? A significant amount of underbilling costs can be saved within the company. Now, I'm going to show you some real numbers here from real technicians. Okay? I'll change the names a little bit so nobody get hurt in the process. But this particular company, their charge-out rate should be $130.29 per hour. That's how much they should be bringing in for every hour they bill the customer. How's Bruce doing? He's right on target. He's at $130.83. Again, real numbers. Brian's at $80.56. You can see what the other two guys are. So looking at these numbers up here, let's answer a couple questions. What will it cost the company for the year, assuming he billed out 1,000 hours, if Brian continues to bill out at $80.56 an hour? Well, if we don't correct that situation, that's going to cost the company over $52,000 by the end of the year. That's huge. Okay. Now, if one tech up here, let's say we got a situation where we need to transfer one of our techs to new construction, retrofit, some other department for a half a day. Which one of these four techs are you going to transfer? sorry, Brian. Bye. Now, when I tell Brian to go with the new construction or retrofit for half a day, what's Brian going to say? Why are you always sending me? Every time things get so, you send me over there. Why are you doing that? Well, you're my lowest producing technician. Okay? You get your numbers up, we'll send somebody else. But till then, you're the man. Okay? So we're going to transfer Brian. Now, what would happen if I transferred Bruce rather than Brian? And I billed out another 4 hours that day. Okay? Well, that's going to cost me right at $200 in gross sales that day, okay? Just because I sent the wrong guy over here. That's why the number one KPI we need to be watching is what's my billable rate per hour and how am I doing that against each service technician. That's extremely important information. And again, looking at our four real techs right here, if I could get them all to just bill out at the proper rate right here, you know what effect that would have on our company for the year? That would generate another $87,000. That's huge. Now, how do I correct that problem? Most of them are on flat rate pricing. Flat rate pricing drills every single week. I don't care how long you've been on flat rate, continue to have drills every single week. Because until that technician can flip through that manual, know exactly where things are and pick them up right away, he won't write them down on the job. He's being pushed by the office, get to the next job. So he's got to be totally familiar with that flat rate book. So do drills continuously. What I'm talking about is pick five or six tasks each time you have a service meeting. Hey, you can find it first. First guy that gets the right answer, give him a candy bar or a pen or something, make him happy. Okay, make a game out of it. Do another one and do that every time you get together until they're so familiar with that book that they can find any task in there just like that. Okay? Until that happens, you're going to be losing money. So does it make sense to track your technician's actual revenue generated per bill hour? Everybody say yes. Yes, absolutely. Okay. Second KPI, we're going to look at three of them in our demand service. There's a lot more than that, but these are three you really need to look at. This is our first-time completion percentage. Okay. If a tech is properly trained, their vehicle is properly stocked, and the required manpower is sent, 95 times out of 100, the technician should complete that job the first time he goes out there. That's the KPI, 95 out of 100, or 95%. What's it costing your company when the job is not completed the first time? Well, you're pretty obvious what's going to happen. That specific job, obviously, is going to be unprofitable. I had to go back a second time without pay. Okay. The travel time and additional work time could have been spent doing another profitable repair over here, but I couldn't go on that job because I'm over here going back on the other one a second time or a third time. So that's producing lost income. And then I've got the inefficiency of the office, because when that guy isn't fixed the first time, now what do we got to do? We got to reschedule. And reschedule, that frustrates the office staff, and it also causes dissatisfied customers. Okay? So we need to finish that thing at least 95% of the time. If a job's not completed the first time, we want to know why. And on a little timesheet we have, it actually shows that on there. They can circle it. Okay? And these are the four reasons why I didn't finish it the first time. Number one, lack of parts. Now, if I have a technician who continually says, gee, I couldn't finish the job because of lack of parts, what's that telling me as an owner or service manager? What's it telling me? Yeah, it means his truck's not stocked properly, or it's so messy he can't find the part. Okay. What if I have a technician who continually says, I couldn't finish the job because of lack of technical expertise? What do I have to do for that tech? Get him some training. I don't need to train all four techs. I just need to train the one that's got the lack of technical expertise. Okay. Lack of manpower. Okay, that's telling me I'm not doing a good job of scoping out what's got to be done before I send the team out there. And it could be a customer no-show. Okay, that's a dispatching issue. But the point is, if I'm not hitting that 95% on a regular basis, we need to know why. Why? Because we want to correct the situation. What's causing that? So second thing, second KPI we want to look at in demand service is our completion percentage. Should be 95% of the time. Okay. Again, let's look at our four techs. Well, if you look up here, none of them is doing a very good job. But we also tracked what the cause was. And you know what we found out? Lack of parts, lack of technical expertise, manpower, customer no-show. Where's our problem with our four techs?
Parts.
Yeah, lack of parts. They're just plain not stocked properly. Now, that could be their part problem. It could be we don't have a system set up to properly restock their trucks every day. Could mean management's in a cash flow position where we don't have any cash, so we can't afford to put the inventory we really need out there. But again, we've got to pinpoint the problem. Why? So we can do something about it. There's no good in the world to find out there's a problem over here if you don't know what caused it because you can't correct it. Okay? And that's what we want to do. Number three in our demand service, callback percentage. It's a well-known fact that of all the service parts that are produced for our industry, because of mass production, roughly 2% of them fail. Okay, that's just because we're producing so much so fast. That's a normal industry average. So if I'm looking at a technician that's got a callback percentage above 2.5 or 2.75, is that a part problem? No, that's an installation problem. Okay. So I want to be tracking their callbacks. Now, you got to be careful. You want to track the callbacks that they actually created. So you got to kind of filter through the callbacks that came in. Okay, not the ones that went out because Joe was there or another department caused them. But look at the ones that they actually created themselves. And again, what's it cost you for a callback? Well, it's very similar to the other one we talked about on the 95% completion rate. It's costing us the technician's travel time, on the job time. Paid by the company was actually zero. We collected nothing for him to go back the second time. The techs spent time on the callback that could have been used on a different one, so we've got lost income, just like we did on the other KPI. You got the same dispatcher frustration from rescheduling, and you got the same frustrated customer on the other end. Similar results, different cause. Okay. Now again, let's look at our four technicians, and again, these are real numbers. Rob right here is at 10.29%. So which tech has a major problem with callbacks? Well, it's pretty obvious. It's Rod. Okay. How do we solve Rod's callback problem? Pardon? Teach him, yeah. Maybe he needs technical training. Get that for him. If he's not stocked properly, take care of that. Do some training so he's installing those things properly, again, so he doesn't have that callback. Okay. Which tech has an acceptable callback? Well, there's only one of them up there, and that's Sean. And if we track the cause of the callback, what's that telling us? Well, we might find out if all my callbacks are because of this particular part, we might find out, hey, we've got a problem maybe not properly installing that particular part. And again, training will help take care of that situation. Okay? Now, the timesheet I'm just going to glance at right here, it's actually been through 52 different revisions. It's the one we use with the ProfitMax software. And it will actually measure all 24 KPIs within your service department. Again, we're just looking at a few of them today. When you look at that timesheet, and again, you can get a blown-up version of it if you get the PowerPoint presentation I'm doing today, or I'll send you one. Again, that's part of the free stuff we'll send you. But use that as a guide. Don't use it as is. Use it as a guide to develop the things that you want to track, because you're not going to be able to track everything we're talking about even today. Okay? You're going to be able to track three or four or five of them maybe if you spend the time and energy to do it. Okay? So modify the timesheet to track what you want tracked. Again, we don't have time to go through that today. But again, on your feedback sheet, that little yellow thing up there, first box, if you want a free copy of it, I'd be glad to send it to you. This is what it looks like. And again, I don't have time to go over it in detail, but I will send you a copy of that and the detail of how to fill it out if you choose to. One thing I do want to point out on this time card, timesheet right here, is this little box right here, which I know you can't read, but I'm going to read it to you. And I want to suggest you put this on your current time card tomorrow, as soon as you get home. And it's a very simple little statement. It says, were you involved in a work-related accident today, and did you inform management immediately? They need to check off yes or no, and they need to sign it. Okay? That one little statement, signed and checked off, can save you untold dollars when it comes to workman's comp claims. Okay? We had a company on Profit Max who was using this. The guy filled out the timesheet, came in on Monday. The service manager looked at that, and he found out Bill had an accident on Friday. So he calls him on the phone. So, Bill, I understand you were hurt Friday. No, I wasn't. Well, it says right on your timesheet you were injured. No, I wasn't. Okay. Hung up the phone, talked to the dispatcher, and said, when he's through with that job, dispatch him to my office. Came in the office, took the timesheet, laid it in front of him, and said, hey, you checked it off right here, you signed it, what's going on? Well, it took him a little while, but he finally fessed up. And you know what he said? That was Friday. He said, I was going to play in a doubleheader softball game on Saturday. And in case I got hurt, I wanted to be able to claim it on workman's comp. Now, obviously, that was the last day he worked there. Okay? But the point is, how many times do you have a technician tell you on Monday, you know, last Wednesday, I picked up something, hurt my back. Can I go claim workman's comp and get that taken care of? You know, if you have that kind of documentation, it can save you a lot of money from a workman's comp standpoint over the years. Okay? Now, let's talk about maintenance a little bit. Maintenance agreements are literally the foundation stone for profitable growth. Now, we have a full program on that. If you're not doing maintenance agreements, you need to. If you're not selling a significant amount of them, you need to spend some time on them, because that is literally the foundation stone for profitable growth in the 21st century. Ties a customer in your company for life, and it's also the feeder system for literally everything else that you do. Your maintenance enterprise within your service department means literally the difference in overall service department profitability or loss. How you handle maintenance is a difference of whether you make money or lose money in your service department. Okay? When service technicians are not billing out demand service, they need to be performing profitable, and that's the key word, profitable maintenance agreements. Okay? From the company's standpoint, lots of companies in our industry look at maintenance agreements like this. It's a loss leader. It's used to get our foot in the door and look for profitable work. Or we're actually just looking to get a new customer who hopefully someday will buy something from us. Okay? Now, neither one of those is wrong, but if you're not priced right in maintenance, it's going to affect your bottom line profitability. Okay? And as an industry, we tend to way, way, way underbill or underprice our maintenance agreements. Service rate we developed earlier, that 138 we used, is kind of a round number, assumes that all your service work and your maintenance agreement work was priced at the same rate. Now, sometimes that's true, sometimes that's not. If we discount our maintenance agreement hourly rate to set that, what has to happen to my demand service rate? It's got to go up, okay? If I need $100 an hour, $138 an hour to make a profit, and I'm going to discount this part of service, I got to raise the other one because my average has got to come back to $138. Okay, in our example, let me show you what I'm talking about. Let's say we've got 1,500 hours we're going to bill out in service, and our rate's $138 an hour. That means we should bring in $207,000 worth of labor. Okay, but if 500 of those 1,500 hours are spent on maintenance, and I discount this 15%, well, 138 times 85% times 500 hours, that's going to generate $58,000 worth of income. My total I needed was 207, subtract maintenance from it and divide it by 1,000 hours. That means my service rate's got to go from 138 to 148 to make up the difference. Okay? Because the weighted average between the two has to equal what you've got to have per hour in your service department. Fail to increase your service rate in this particular case up here, if you do the math, will cost the company over $10,000 a year if you didn't change your rate. That is an overall 5% loss in your net profit. Okay? You've got to bill out maintenance agreements properly if you're going to be profitable in your service department. Now, you've got to understand the math when it comes to flat rate pricing and printing your books. Some flat rate companies understand this perfectly, others may not, so I want to go through it with you. In order to do that, I've got to give you a little history. When I was a little boy, they only had a sale at the department store once a year. And usually that was right after Christmas, and that shirt you could buy all year for $20 was only 10 or 12 bucks after Christmas. It was a real sale, okay? Do you know how the pricing is set in the retail clothing industry today, how their profit margins are calculated? Everything's set on the sale price. If they can sell that shirt, that pants, that blouse, their dress, whatever, if they can sell it at sale price, that's where their profit margin is set. Okay? How often do they have a sale today? Every other day. Stop one today, start another one tomorrow. Why? Because their profit margin is set on the sale price. Now, if I happen to run down to the local department store and I need a coat or a suit or a tie tonight, or my wife needs a dress, she runs in, it's not on sale, guess what? They just made some extra profit. But their profit margin is set on the fact of the sale price. That's where they're set. Now, that whole thought has moved into the grocery industry as well. If I go to Kroger's in Little Owensboro, Kentucky, where I live, I better take my Kroger card with me. You know why? Because grapes are $1.99 a pound. But if I got my Kroger card, they're only $1.49 a pound. Now, how much does Kroger's want to get for their grapes? $1.49. Bring the card, they hit their profit margin. If I forgot my card, they just made another 50 cents an hour. Okay? Now, with that in mind, think about flat rate pricing. If we tell the flat rate company, the first question they ask is, what internal rate do you want to use? Well, I want to use, let's say, hypothetically, $100. Make it simple. Fine. What kind of discount do you want to give your maintenance agreement customers? Well, I want to give them a 15% discount. So my repair price is set at $100. My maintenance agreement customer is set at $85. What happened to my, and if I do a real great job and I get all my customers on a maintenance agreement, what happened to my 15% profit? It's gone. It's gone. Okay? What has to happen is that $100 I need that I calculated, that needs to be my maintenance agreement price. That's what I need to be setting my maintenance agreement customers' pricing on. And then I want to take that $100 and divide it by 0.85, which in my case comes up to 117, and that's what I want to set my repair price on. Okay? That way, every time I turn a retail customer to a maintenance agreement customer, I'm getting the profit margin I want. And I'm getting a little premium on that if they're not a maintenance agreement customer. Okay? Do the math on it. Okay? Now, most of the flat rate companies understand that process. They'll change the numbers for you when they print the books or give you the software. But you need to understand that whole process because some may not understand it as well as others. And if you don't put the proper price in, even though you know what the hourly rate should be, it can put you out of business in the middle of the process. Okay? Whoops. Maintenance agreements. The average for our industry is we have 90 slow days a year. Okay? 90 slow days a year. Most techs bill out roughly 50% of their time. We already talked about that. That means each technician has roughly 360 hours per year, slow hours, that need to be filled by something. Well, that something is maintenance agreements. That's the only thing you have to fill that slow time. Okay? Well, if you calculate the fact that it takes you an hour and a half a year for a maintenance agreement, and again, it'll be different for different people in here. Let's say you go out twice a year and you're physically on the job 45 minutes each time. That's an hour and a half a year. So if I take an hour and a half per agreement, divided into my 360 hours that are slow each year, that means my technician has to have 240 maintenance agreements to keep him busy during those 90 slow days. Now again, it's amazing when you begin to set the bar and set the goal, and now what are we going to do about it, guys? Okay? And what I want you to suggest you do is find out how many maintenance agreements each of your techs has to have to fill those 90 slow days, and that's dependent on how many much time you spend on each maintenance agreement. Okay? In my case, it's 240. Okay? So that's the goal for each one of my three technicians. And I'm going to, and I know what the total is for the company, what we're shooting for, but this is the specific goal for each tech. Now I'm going to put a sheet like this right on the board, and I'm going to track how many maintenance agreements each one of our technicians has sold during the year. And as soon as, in this case, Tom has sold 265, now things are a bit slow. Okay, got to lay somebody off. Who's not going to get laid off? Well, Tom's going to get to work. Why? Because he's sold enough work to keep him busy during those slow days. Okay, you won't have to lay him off at one time and give him the reasoning for it. And guess what? Maintenance agreement sales will go up. Okay. Commissions when it comes to maintenance agreements. Get kind of dry up here. When it comes to commissions, all of us usually pay one to somebody, usually the tech. Industry-wise, we usually pay $5, $8, $10, $12. You know what I found out over the last 25 years? If you put a $20 bill in front of a technician, that's the dollar figure that just kind of gets them off a dead center and they start talking to customers. Okay? 8 might do it, 12 might do it, 15's not bad. You put a $20 bill out there and train them how to talk to the customers, you'll see maintenance agreement sales. Another variation of that, which you're beginning to see in our industry quite a bit, it's kind of new, and again, I don't have time to go into a lot of detail on it, but that is setting the customer up on a monthly withdrawal, monthly charge for their credit card. Keep the numbers simple. Let's say your maintenance agreement is $144 a year. So you get the agreement from the customer to charge them $12 per month on a regular basis. That has wonderful effects. Number one, consistent cash flow. Number two, the customer will never, ever, ever cancel. You just call them up next year and say, is it okay if we come out Thursday and do your maintenance agreement? Okay. And the other benefit is this. You can pay a $12 commission to the tech, okay? But he gets $1 for every month that it's charged out. Well, what happens after a couple of years and your tech sold 240 maintenance agreements? Now he's getting a check from the company for $240 every single month, okay? And if he leaves, the agreement is it stops at that point in time. That's that little hook that keeps him working with you just a little bit quicker without running down the street for 50 cents an hour, okay? Let everybody in your company sell a maintenance agreement. I mean, literally, the office staff, the dispatcher, all your friends, everybody who works for you has friends, neighbors, relatives, people they go to church with, they work with, they talk with, and they all have furnaces, they all have air conditioners. Why not give them the opportunity to sell those and give them the commission just like everybody else? Not a reason in the world you can't do that, okay? And you should. And before paying commissions, require something. Okay. The neatest thing I have seen was actually with the contract of the year in the plumbing industry. I was doing some work for him for a few years ago. He was in Houston, Texas. He had 7 plumbing service techs. The average tech was selling 2 to 3 maintenance agreements a week, and they were getting $20 for every one of them. But you know what he required of a technician before he was paid his $20 commission? He had to physically sit down and write a handwritten thank you note to the customer first. Now, they would have to do that before working hours. They'd come in on their time. The company provided the stationery. Some techs were great at writing a thank you note. Some weren't too good at that. Didn't do well in school in English. So they had a cork board up there with about 4 by 6 cards with a typewritten thank you note. They could literally pull it off the board, set it on the table, and copy it word for word if they wanted to. Okay? But think about it. When's the last time you physically got a thank you note from anybody for anything in this electronic world? Doesn't happen very often. And when it does, guess what? You remember it. Okay? And by the way, make paying of commissions a big deal. Don't just put it in their check. You know, once a month, have everybody come in for lunch or maybe go out to dinner and give them out in front of everybody else. Why? That one technician who got a $300 check versus a $25 check over here, they start talking to each other. How'd you do that? Okay? It helps. Do you have a comment?
3 years.
Good point. Good question. The question is that $20 a renewal? Is that paid all the time? If you sell 3 years in a row, does it get $60? From my perspective, I like to see them paid every single time that thing gets renewed. That's going to keep me as a technician or seller engaged. Okay. So if he's going to sell a 3-year contract, he gets $60. If it's going to be renewed again next year, whether he did it or somebody else in the office did it, he still gets his $20. Because that's built into your pricing to begin with, hopefully. Should be. Receptionists are recommended. We're going to cover that in a moment, and that's that team building we're talking about. Another quick question? Okay. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. If you can get your customer service rep, person who answers the phone, to team with your tech and split the commission, it's amazing. We'll talk about that in just a moment. He's saying, what happens if a technician went out initially, talked to him about it, they didn't buy it, and then the second tech goes out there and... Okay. My position is whoever sold it gets the commission, period. Again, if you're going to renew the thing, then give it to the person who renewed it. It depends on whether you renew by the technician or whether you renew in the office. Okay? If you're renewing by the technician, then yeah, you pay him, whoever renewed it, that amount of money. If it's renewed by the office, then it goes back to the original person who sold it. Okay?
Yep.
Bottom line, show me the money. Yep. Now, this is a dispatcher thing we're talking about, and this will sell maintenance agreements right off the bat. You just change this one statement, write it down, look at it when it comes back. When the customer calls in for service, the first words out of the dispatcher's mouth should be this. Thank you for calling ABC Company, Mrs. Jones. By the way, do you pay full price or are you one of our discount customers? Now, what's the next question out of her mouth? Well, how do I become a discount customer? Well, let me tell you about that. If you're one of our annual maintenance agreement customers, you get da 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 da. and they kind of prep the customer and say, by the way, you don't try to sell it on the phone. Technician will be out there for the repair in a little while. He'll give you some additional information, some literature. If you want to go ahead and sign up for it at that point in time, we can go ahead and give you a 15% discount on today's call. I tell you, if the customer service rep properly preps the customer and the technician goes out there and closes them, work together, you pay a $20 spiff and give each one of them $10. I know companies who do that. They sell maintenance agreements right and left. Okay? Don't want them in competition. You want them working together with each other. That makes a huge, huge bottom line difference. KPI number four. This is for the maintenance department. Okay? We're out there on maintenance as a technician. You should be educating and informing the customer of imminent parts failures, things that you think are going to fail relatively soon, and you need to be educating the customer about additional accessories that could enhance their comfort or their safety in the middle of that process. The KPI for what we're talking about is when a technician is out there doing a maintenance agreement, they should be bringing in an additional $40 an hour in additional repairs and or add-on sales. Now, that may sound like a lot. That is a very doable number. But again, if you set the goal and you measure them against that goal. Okay? Let's look at our four techs again. These are real numbers. Okay? Bruce was supposed to be at 40. He's actually at 43, doing a great job. So is Bryant. Sean's right on target. Rob here has got a problem. Okay? Now, first question is pretty obvious. Which tech is not hitting the goal? Well, it's Rob, right? It's pretty obvious. Okay. What would be the first thing we want to do and want to check on with Rob? Well, the first thing I would want to check on, okay, I want to find out how long it's taken him to do the maintenance agreement. Now, this particular company is structured to do it in 45 minutes. My question is, is it taking him 23 minutes to go through it? Therefore, he's not even spent enough time to do the maintenance properly, much less look around for repairs. Or he might be taking too much time and he's just doing a lousy job altogether. But the first thing I want to do is find out how long it's taking him to do the maintenance agreement. Okay? And what's a good follow-up for tracking? This is great when you get that report working on a regular basis and you find out Rob's at $13 an hour. I'll tell you, I'm going to have a sit-down with Rob and we're going to talk about that situation and say, okay, Rob, today is Friday. We're going to sit down again next Friday. And we're going to look at all the maintenance calls you went on next week. And we're going to see if this $13.30 went up or not. It's called accountability. Again, setting the goal, measuring against that goal. Okay. Now, the fifth...
That's a simple order piece.
Exactly.
That's the revenue we're talking about.
Any additional income over the maintenance agreement itself. Absolutely. $40 an hour is a very, very doable number. Now, there's never been one number set in the industry to measure against. So guess what? We just hope they sell a bunch of stuff. Okay. Set a goal, they'll tend to meet it. Next KPI deals with maintenance agreement efficiency. Okay? Now the problem here is people like myself. I've been talking for 25 years, and others have as well, about how wonderful maintenance agreements are. And one of the great benefits is if I got a technician who only has 6 hours worth of work scheduled tomorrow, I can go send him out on a couple maintenance agreements and fill his day. Well, that reduces my non-billable time, keeps my tech happy, fills in our schedule. Everything looks great. Okay. The problem is, when I've said that long enough to contractors and the contractors are talking to their technicians, now the tech thinks anytime you send me on a maintenance call, things must be slow. Okay? So if John comes in at noon and I say, John, I want you to go out and do 3 maintenance agreements this afternoon, John's thinking, gee, things must be slow. Okay? Now there's this law of nature. And the law of nature basically says this: all of nature abhors a vacuum. If there's space or time, it gets filled. So if I send him out at noon on 3 maintenance agreements, how long is it going to take him to do them? All afternoon, right? Till quitting time. Because he's thinking things are slow. If I go back, they'll send me home. It's going to take him all afternoon. Now, what if I'm structured to spend 45 minutes on that job and it takes me an hour and 15? What happened to my profit? It's gone. Okay. So I have to measure their time on the job. Okay. If I got 500 maintenance agreements and I only go over 10 minutes on each one on the average, that's another 83 hours a year at my $138 an hour. That's costing me another $11,000 for the year. That's a big number. Okay. Yes. Let's see. Number 5 and number 4. Yeah, you do. And that's a very good point. That's a very good point. Matter of fact, let's look at our four guys to address that very question. Okay. How long did it take him? Again, our case, it should be 45 minutes. Bruce is at 48, Brian's at 60, Rob's at 62, and Sean's at 40. Okay? What have we found out about Rob so far? Well, Rob only hit $13 an hour, but in addition to that, he's slow. He's not only not selling, he's slow. He loses in both positions. Okay. What about Bryant and Bruce? They both went a little bit over, okay, but they both averaged $40 an hour on repair, so that's not a bad deal. Now, what about my last guy over here, Sean? He actually did it in 40 minutes rather than 45. Now, normally I might be a little upset, but in this particular case, he's doing them in 40 minutes and he's still getting $39.69 per hour. So he's still hitting his goal. He's just more efficient than the other guys are. These are the things we got to track on a regular basis. Okay? Now, last thing we're going to look at is what we call profit smart activities. Profit smart activities are the generation of what we call a qualified sales lead. We're going to go through what that is in a moment. And the generation of maintenance agreement sales and or renewals. The opportunities are huge when it comes to your technician. If they work all year, typically they do 100 calls a month. They're in 1,200 customers' homes on a regular basis. We got to train them to talk to the people. I talked to this gentleman up here. He sent two of his guys to Gail Carnegie. Why? So they can learn how to talk to people. You go through fast food, what do they ask you every time? Do you want to try this new product or would you like to upsize? Now it's irritating, but guess what? Certain percentage didn't think about it and they bought it. You got to talk to the customer. It's just that simple. Okay? Arrested growth. Many companies are experiencing arrested growth. Year after year, they grow modestly or not at all. When you factor in the inflation and the manufacturer distributor's price increases, actually their profitability and sales are shrinking. Okay? Close rates, because we're going to hone in on getting your technician to open his eyes. This is some national averages in our industry. They're a couple years old now. But the close rate for leads generated, by your service department, that is through the technician, 74.7% of those close. The only one larger than that, the only one higher than that, is customer referral, which is slightly higher. But the next one after that, best close rate, is with your service department. Okay? Leads created by your service technician. We're going to talk about how to do that in a moment. Average sale per lead source. The leads from your service department technician have a higher close rate in terms of dollars than any other source out there. When it comes to percentage of all retrofit sales by lead source, properly done, service department will have at least half of those leads. Okay? Look what the other ones are. Advertising only gets 28% of leads. Company generate 11, salesperson 21. Okay? Percentage of retail sales dollars by lead source. Service department makes over 50% of the total sales in dollars from the leads that come from the service department. Again, if you do what we're going to talk about here in a moment. Okay? So when we look at this from a service standpoint, service department has the second highest close rate. It has the highest average sale. It generates as many leads as any other department. It creates the highest percentage of sales and has more sales dollars than all other sources combined. And yet, in terms of expense, it costs you less than 6% of your marketing budget for that. Less than 6%. Okay. Does it make sense to invest in your technicians and teach them how to talk to the customer? Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. Our marketing with our service techs needs to be centered on the service department. It's more effective and it's more affordable than traditional marketing. You can quickly, daily if you wish, change the message. All you have to have is a service meeting that morning and say, guys, we're going to push this today. Take out this flyer. Let's do a little role play and starting Monday we're going to start talking about this particular new thing. You can change it quicker. It's more focused and precise with your offerings. You can literally hand a technician a flyer. He can talk to the customer about it. Hey, we got these setback thermostats on the truck. While here, would you like me to put one in? We got a discount on today. Here's a flyer. Can be very focused. And guess what? It's delivered by the most trusted source in the customer's eyes, and that's your technician. Your technician. Okay. Why don't we want our technicians selling replacement of equipment? Okay. I know some of you do that, and again, that's acceptable if you don't have a salesperson. Okay? But if you do, I do not want my technician selling replacement of equipment for lots of different reasons. The technician will average selling that same piece of equipment 30 to 50% less than a trained salesperson will. Okay? technician only has time to pick the low-hanging fruit. He'll go for this replacement and quickly do it, and he'll do it based on nameplate size, and he's not going to turn around and do a load calculation, find out what the customer should really have. That makes them both oversized and makes you uncompetitive, and it's a disservice to the customer. Service tech's hourly pay is the same whether they sell or not, so they don't have a real incentive to sell out there. Okay. The salesperson, however, eats on what they bake. Okay. Salespersons have been trained and they have time to spend with a customer. That's why their price is generally 30-50% higher. And having your service technicians be your salesperson's biggest competition just really doesn't make sense at all when you think about it. Okay. So again, the only time that makes sense for your technicians to sell the replacement of equipment is when you don't have a fully trained salesperson, which could be you as the owner, or it could be a salesperson that works for you. Okay. Now, we don't want the tech selling, but we do want him to open his eyes and create what we call a qualified sales lead. Okay. I'm going to define a qualified sales lead for you. Technician is in the customer's home. He's doing the repair. When he's finished the repair, he comes back to the customer. So, by the way, Mr. and Ms. Jones, I've got the furnace or the air conditioner. It's running fine right now. But I noticed your furnace is a little over 20 years old. That's running. It'll probably be okay for a short period of time. However, you may not be aware of it, but there's new equipment out there, high-efficiency equipment that'll help you be more comfortable, cost you less money, it's a lot quieter. Would you like to talk to somebody in our office about the possibility of replacing that piece of equipment? If the customer says, yes, I would like to talk to somebody, then the technician literally gets on his cell phone or the customer's phone, calls the office, say, I'm standing here with Mr. and Mrs. Jones. They'd like to set an appointment to have somebody come out and talk to them about the possible replacement of their equipment. Hand the phone to the customer. If that process is done, 97% of the time when the salesperson shows up, the customer will be there. Okay? Now, if you do exactly the same scenario, but the technician leaves the site, on the way to his next job, he calls the office, hey, call Mr. and Ms. Jones, they're interested in having an appointment set up, and the office does that. Statistically, instead of 97%, they'll only be there 67% of the time. It's absolutely critical that the technician talk to the customer and set it while they're there. Okay? Now, again, we don't want the tech selling, but we do want to pay him a significant spiff for opening his eyes. So we're going to pay him $20 to $25 when he creates this qualified sales lead. And again, you can circle it on the timesheet. There's a place for that. You'll see it. And then if the salesperson goes out and sells it, the technician earns an additional $20 to $25. So he can earn $40 to $50 on a call, not selling, and they don't want to sell, but just opening their eyes, look around, communicate with the customer, and help set the appointment. Okay? That's huge. Now, most service techs fail to inform the customer and management about equipment that needs to be replaced. That's costing you thousands of dollars a year. This is KPI number 6. Lead generation. Of all the calls a tech goes on during the month, 12% of those should be turned into what we just described as a qualified sales lead. That's the KPI. Okay? Let's do a little math. It'll open your eyes. It opened mine the first time I did it. Again, if we do 100 calls a month, KPI is 12%. That means he created 12 qualified sales leads. So let's say he creates those 12 leads over 12 months. Let's say the average replacement cost is $3,700, and for most of you, since you're the cream of the crop, it's a whole lot higher than that. Let's say it's only $3,700 to replace it, and you only close 50% of them. Okay? At 12 KPIs, that's going to generate another $266,000 worth of sales. Okay? And that's not helping him sell. That's just opening his eyes and helping you set the leads. That one thing here, if you'll spend the time training your technicians, role-playing with them, getting them comfortable with the process, that can get you off that stagnation period we talked about really, really quickly. Do the math. If you got 2 or 3 or 4 service techs with your percentages, which is probably higher than 50%, and this, you have a huge number there. Huge number. Okay. So let's look at our 4 technicians. Again, goal is 12%. Nobody's doing a very good job except Sean over here. So which technician's exceeding it? Sean's pretty obvious. How can we help Bruce and Brian hit their goal? We're going to script and role play with them. Until they're comfortable in front of you, they'll never be comfortable in front of the technician. Okay. And guess what additional gross sales would be there if all 4 of these guys were hitting 12%? Over $1 million a year. Well, so I only had half of that. $500,000 additional sales isn't bad for most of us in here. Okay? It's worth investing in your technician. Okay? So in summary, in our demand service, we want to set our goals for our service techs, and we want to measure their performance. We want to set profitable hourly rates. We want to update our flat rate books at least once a year. I urge you to do it at least once. Twice is better. We want to look at our KPIs. We want to look at our average billable revenue per hour and measure that. First time completion percentage, and figure that, and our callback percentage. When it comes to our maintenance department, within our service department, we want to properly price our maintenance agreements for overall profitability. We talked about that. If you have 90 slow days per year, that's got to be filled by those maintenance agreements so we know how many we should have in our company. We want to be sure that flat rate pricing is in effect and your discounted rates are profitably set. We talked about how to do that. We want to script and role play with the customer, what we want them to say to the customer in terms of selling maintenance agreements. And we want to go through the KPIs we had in that department. In terms of my Profit Smart area summary, sales leads generated by the service technician have the highest ratios and the highest average sales. We want to get our techs opening their eyes, looking around, talking to the customer. Talk about qualified sales leads and train your techs. And when you do that, guess what? Retrofit sales will literally skyrocket.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 800-432-7963. The vision of Grandian Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandiassociates.com or give us a call at 1-800-432-7963. The Small Business University audio series is produced and distributed by Grandian Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.